September 11th is a day that we all remember even 25 years later.
We will read all these names. We will linger over them and learn their stories.
The heroes who stepped up remind us of America's strength every single day.
May he bless the souls of the departed, and may he always guide our country. God bless America.
Well, good morning. It is 7:14. It is the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy here. And yes, if you have noticed, we've been having some definitely some power issues. Bob, are we connected here from where you are at the moment?
It appears to be.
Oh,
we're connected telephonically.
Yeah, I like that.
We could do better. You know what this reminds me of, Greg?
What's that?
Can you imagine what the 9/11 folks were going through responding to the emergencies? And they had a lot of communication failures. They were overloaded, remember? And they couldn't communicate from department to, you know, law enforcement to fire rescue, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, communications is always key. And we still have challenges to this day, obviously.
Well, yeah, and you stop and think about people that around the world, literally, because, you know, people had friends and family that were traveling and business people that, you know, were within companies that were working in the World Trade Center towers, and they're all trying to call at the same time, and nobody's getting through because of the overload.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So here we are 25 years later on the sad anniversary of September 11th, 2001, it does seem hard to believe for many of us who've been around for a while that 25 years has come and gone, what appears to be so quickly. Yet, when we see any kind of footage from that time period, it brings us right back to ground zero.
Oh, absolutely. It just the retrospect, and yet 25 years. Long time, but yet it does feel like yesterday. And you and I, obviously, like most people, remember exactly where we were.
And there's so many young people that are growing up that either weren't born yet or were of a very young age. So they grew up in a post 9/11 era. The way you're dealt with at the airport is nothing different for them and for that generation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely changed. But yeah, speaking of where we were, I remember I was, visiting the hospital. My wife then was getting, she had just had some surgery on her ankle, and she was getting an examination. And we knew the orthopedic surgeon, the doctor. He was a friend of ours. I actually played softball with him, and Dr. Nowicki. And he came in while we're actually in the examining room, and he goes, "Did you hear a plane hit the World Trade Center?" I'm like, "No." And I thought about it right away. You know, I wonder what the radio station's doing. But I didn't. There was no sense of panic or anything else because I thought, oh, it's a Cessna,
mm-hmm.
You know, probably a medical emergency. You know, the guy passed out behind the controls and accidentally,
right. You
know, hit the World Trade Center. And then once you got some live footage going, you go, "Ooh, that looks kind of nasty." And then right before we were leaving, he came back in again. He said, "Oh, another plane just hit."
Yeah.
And that's when I think myself and everybody else who was aware of what was going on knew this was something completely different.
Yeah, we had the same scenario. I was on the air in St. Louis at the time, and our news person was in a different room. But I could hear her through a speaker, you know, to the side, and that's what she said. A plane just hit the World Trade Center. And we, like so many people that just heard it, assumed that, little plane, little Cessna, that kind of thing. And then she came back and told us that it was a jet. And we're like, okay, that changes everything. And, of course, then, you know, by then the news was breaking and was going around the world and making the network news. I remember it was Regis. You know, they were on live doing the show.
And, that's right.
And remember that whole thing of where they, again, like everybody else, they were just getting information and then realized what was going on. And, of course, it changed everything.
And I had not been doing talk radio that for very long at all. I'd made the transition from the rock station in Orlando, same company, over to WDBO on the talk side. And so you know, I'm still, getting my bearings, so to speak.
Sure.
And so, you know, immediately I'm called into work. And I remember, you know, we went live with Peter Jennings as we carried ABC News then. Mm-hmm. And so that dates this whole equation in another way with Peter Jennings on the air.
Right.
And, of course, he, you know, was one of the masters and handled, you know, things just appropriately. And then as soon as we could, you know, go live with any different information, we started to do that. And things obviously were still unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Pentagon and all that followed. It was, it's a day that we're never going to forget, and we never should.
No, and I think that's probably what's bothering a lot of Americans, is how many they feel like did. But again, when you do the math on this, so someone who's in their 30s was just a kid and maybe didn't fully understand what was going on, who was behind it. There's still controversy about that. And so as time goes on and as people age and get older, and I don't mean old, I'm talking about young and middle-aged Americans, they don't remember. It might as well be the Vietnam War for them.
And wasn't there really, there was a time when I think there was a lot of agreement that we weren't going to continue to show the video on the air.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, if that was just sort of a, you know, an unwritten kind of agreement that we weren't going to do that. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure if that was the best way to handle it. I get the PTSD angle of it, re-traumatizing people, but you don't also want to forget or have that thing sort of go away or have that whole scenario be unfamiliar to younger Americans.
There's that side of the coin, but kind of like when you say going back to that agreement, does it give the people who are behind it encouragement, as in, look what we did? Although we moved on, built the Freedom Tower. I was in New York City when that was being built. It was probably about two-thirds done at that point in time. So, yeah, you can look at it from both sides, I think.
Yeah, I get it. That, look, terrorists do these major type of events wanting clearly major coverage. They want to be able to show and to frighten, you know, in this case, the American people, the American government. But it really had the opposite effect because nothing since then, for 25 years, has brought Americans together any tighter, any closer than what 9/11 did, both just across political aisles and also from a spiritual standpoint. Churches literally were full. So you had politicians getting along, people praying for guidance. So the terrorists definitely didn't win.
No, you're absolutely right. I think, and you kind of touched on it, I think one of the most interesting things, and it's a little irritating, I think, we let bad people determine our daily life. We let criminals determine our daily life by the new things we put into place. You talk about flying, and you know, then the guy did the thing with the shoes, and we've got the thing with the liquids, and it's like, I know you have to take precautions. I kind of just hate that we have to feel reactionary every time one person does something bad.
Yeah, I get that. And look, maybe part of it could be my previous martial arts training. Mm-hmm. And I was training at a pretty high level even when 9/11 had happened. So, you know, and a fan of Bruce Lee as well. And how does this all work together? Well, you don't ever want to reach a state of paranoia, looking over your shoulder. We cannot live in freedom and live our lives and the American dream doing that.
Right.
However, we can't just go away walking blindly or numbly into the future. Mm-hmm. We have to pay attention. And, you know, I have the quick phrase that I always told my kids, you know, head on a swivel.
Right.
And that's, you know, Bruce Lee used to pretend like there's a bad guy around the corner.
Uh-huh.
And so he would gain that mindset, but not with a sense of paranoia, a sense of kind of always be prepared and know that the unexpected can occur at any time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is the big difference. You know, you talk about it being the thing that brought America together, and nothing else, like you said, in the last quarter century has done that. And then you look how far we are now in America, where any little thing, and we're, you know, the land of the easily offended, as you refer to it as, and that's kind of where we are right now. But it was interesting in how I watched it change even in the years after. So, you know, we did the memorial services the next year or two that were there, and they had, you know, a Protestant pastor. You had, you know, those from the Jewish faith. You had those from all different faiths. And it wasn't but just a few years after that, I remember, and I'm going blank on who the pastor was at the time, they actually gave him guidelines. And interestingly enough, one of them was, you can't mention Jesus. It's like it started to turn even a little bit just 2 or 3 years after. And that sentiment was creeping back in. You could, you know, you could say a generic, you know, small g God, but you couldn't mention Jesus. And I thought, wow, that is, it's amazing how quickly that little thing, it's a big thing to some of us, but that started to change.
Yeah, because he's such an offensive character.
Well, it offends you if it's something that you don't believe, or not even don't believe, because we've had that conversation with listeners, and it's not even that it's a don't believe. It, like, it somehow is offensive if you mention. But the fact that it changed that quickly in American culture, in how whoever was putting on that program had changed their mind. Ironically, I was just watching while we were away. By the way, maybe we should back up. We have obviously been off the air. All the equipment is not working yet. So what you're hearing is me and Bob, but a lot of things that you normally would hear at this time are not going to work. We will be trying to break for national news at top and bottom of the hour, but just bear with us. Literally, there's an engineer running around the building right now trying to fix things. So we do appreciate your patience. But Bob, one thing that I was watching this morning was when President Bush went out to throw the first pitch. Do you remember that video and that experience of the game in New York?
Absolutely. The crowd could not have been more electric.
Yeah.
It didn't matter whether you voted for that man or not. We were 100% together. We were behind him. He was leading us through one of the most terrible things to ever happen to our nation. And that was kind of the, you know, exclamation point of America is coming back and coming back strong. It still gives me chills to think about that moment.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's like I think it was Jeter said, hey, do it right or they'll boo you, you know, or, you know. And literally, he walked out there. You could tell that had to be a scary moment in a sense, if you know what I mean. But, you know, he was very well protected.
Well, and he had that look of seriousness on his face. It wasn't fear. It was determination, but there was a sense of sadness, but also a sense of we're all looking forward together. And yeah, there was the weight of the world was on this guy's shoulders, and he's got to go out there and throw a baseball. And that was probably one pitch that meant more to the world than anyone I've ever seen before.
It was a crazy moment. It was an exciting moment. You could tell, who knows what kind of vest he had under that jacket, but that had to be an exciting moment, a scary moment, because, again, we don't know the risks. Now, was security really tight, you know, at the field that night? Absolutely. But, again, you did not know what could happen, and so it was a risk on everybody's part. You know, you had that going on. You had Saturday Night Live when they decide, okay, we've got to go out there and be funny and help heal. I mean, there were so many cultural things because we'd never dealt with that in this modern, at that point, modern social media entertainment industry, that you had to decide how do you move forward.
Well, you didn't know either. Was this a one-day, one-time event with one cell? Or was this going to be coming in waves?
Yeah,
what
right.
other ways are we going to be attacked? Anywhere where large crowds were, were very, very suspect. I remember, you know, like when the Gators, you know, finally came back to playing, the police presence and was incredible, which it generally is to this day.
Yeah.
But I think that's when it really... That's when they took that next giant step to really ratchet things up from that level.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, and it, just from a standpoint of moving forward, I'll do the opposite looking back. When you talk about the risk of things happening, because remember, the towers coming down was not the first event. It was, what, about the third of their planning their attacks, the earlier tower attack, the coal? I mean, you had multiple things that had happened over the years there.
Yeah, yeah, we had warning. We knew, if you want to get into the political nomenclature of it, then you have to consider there was a separation between domestically what you could collect from information and and also internationally. So there was this what they called the wall of separation between the FBI and the CIA, to make an easy example out of it.
Yeah.
And we found out that that was actually a weakness designed to protect Americans and our privacy, but ineffectual against this kind of an enemy at that time.
Yeah. Well, and then obviously you were talking earlier about the communication issues that happened on that date. That's where a lot of things started changing, because they were trying to get multiple agencies on common frequencies. That's when even watching your television changed, because they were changing so many things the FCC was having to do to consolidate those things, get some things off of those frequencies. And that's why a lot of those things happened, was based on what happened on 9/11.
Oh, and the years post 9/11, the tremendous amount of money that was spent just in that area alone of changing communications for everything, like you said, broadcast channels to all of your public safety channels, law enforcement, fire rescue, in pretty much every community. So just from that standpoint alone, what an undertaking that was, both in time and energy and, of course, in cost.
Yeah. Hey, listen, because things are coming together very quickly here from an engineering standpoint, we're going to take a really quick break and join Network News, and then hopefully, at least at some level, come back and join with things a little more normal. I hope.
Yeah, sounds good.
A free American people will not be intimidated, nor will we be defeated.
We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
We need to remember those heroes on that day, September 11th, and those that protect our freedom today.
We're coming up on 7:38. It is the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy in with Bob Rose. And yes, as we are kind of working through our morning, we are continuing to take care of some technical issues. A lot of folks know, Bob, that there was actually a power outage last night, and that affected a lot of equipment. And with our digital world, sometimes it takes things a little longer to get those hamsters rolling and get it all warmed up.
Well, we're working on less than ideal conditions, but how appropriate, really, and trying to think of just what the, you know, the first responders were dealing with. I mean, their heads had to be spinning, and they were having communication issues, and phone lines were tied up. There was too much traffic on the cell towers, and all those things that, you know, have been really been worked on, rectified, and made us better since then. But, you know, you just got to push through it. And, of course, that's what we're doing here. And, you know, it's been 25 years.
Wow.
And one of the things that, you know, is irritating, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I mean, he's the self-proclaimed architect of this terrorist act. And, you know, he remains behind bars at the U.S. Naval Base in Guantanamo 25 years later. Talk about a lack of justice for the families that lost loved ones during that awful event. That has got to be a source of irritation for a lot.
Well, you know, and that's one thing that just, even at the local level, you know, we'll hear a story on our local news about, you know, well, a death sentence was carried out last night. And then we hear the story of, you know, the person that they killed in 1985. And it's like, I know you don't want to rush to judgment in a lot of those cases, because technology has come a long way. DNA has changed, you know, the results of what we thought something was. But at some point, in a case like that, it's like, really, what's the holdup? What's the problem here?
Yeah, there's a sense of frustration there. And, you know, yeah, you talk about, you know, giving people a chance to defend themselves and going through the appeals process. I mean, 25 years for this act that I know we have a ton of information that implicates this guy and at least four others.
Oh, yeah.
In this event. Hey, by the way, you know, there are things going on to commemorate 9/11. Of course, you know, Ground Zero, that is going to be a huge event. But like Embry-Riddle, the ROTC students up the road, Daytona area,
yeah,
they're honoring 9/11 responders with a memorial stair climb, and they've done this before. So they will climb what essentially would be, you know, 2,100 steps, and they'll do that at the Daytona International Speedway. So that's just one way people are, you know, remembering and with a sense of healing,
right,
and a sense of coming together once again. So I think that is that's a good exercise.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of folks, they'll do that at the Swamp as well. There are different communities in our area that are putting on, you know, special memorial services today. Marion County, very big about that sort of thing as well. I'm not sure if you have the details. We can get those for folks, though. So, yeah, a lot of activities going on around the country as we remember, you know, because while we talk about 25 years, to some people that has been a lifetime. And then you stop and think about, you know, the single parents who raised children after those years. I mean, one of the things that I found was interesting, and some of these actually can be heard at the memorial there in New York City, and that's the final phone calls that were made from planes, from the building. Again, because of communication, a lot of those folks making those last calls of their life were getting voicemail. They were getting the answering machine, if you will. And a lot of those messages weren't heard until later and after the fact when people realized what was going on. And you can still, like I said, hear those because, you know, they've preserved them so that we do remember. And you can hear the human side, the human emotion of what that was like when someone's on a plane or a building and they realize they're not going home that day and they're calling their loved one.
And yeah, and here we are 25 years later. And we are entrenched in the Middle East again.
Yeah, yeah.
Iran-backed Houthi forces seized some coastal territory. This just happened hours ago in Yemen along the Red Sea. That is going to threaten some regional shipping there, Saudi oil exports, and part of this wider ongoing conflict. I mean, 25 years later, 9/11, we were attacked by terrorists. I think a lot of Americans didn't truly get kind of that the issues that would boil up in the Middle East. Clearly, we knew that, you know, Israel had been under attack from time to time by some of its neighboring nations.
Sure.
You know, we already had our dealings with Iran because that now is 47 years or more ago.
Wow.
So we knew that. But 9/11 was, you know, it brought it home to our shores. Mm-hmm. And that really changed the dynamic. But again, 25 years, and we are still fighting a war against terrorism. And what bothers me even more about that idea is that we've got people that live in this nation who have every opportunity to live the American dream, and yet they decided that they would be more supportive of, say, Hamas than of our, you know, Jewish allies.
Well, think about the people that, unfortunately, some states have voted into office, and they are in our nation's capital, and I don't think they should be.
Maybe we didn't. Maybe we didn't do a good enough job post 9/11 to help to explain to the younger people that these terrorists want to destroy the American way of life. Mm-hmm. They, you know, when they yell "death to America," when they scream that, they mean it. It's not just a meaningless chant. That is what they strive for. We don't strive for, you know, death to this nation or that nation. Of course, we're fighting a war against a regime, a terrible regime, but we want to overcome that to keep them from being a threat to the rest of the world and to actually open up freedom to the millions of people that live in Iran.
Absolutely. Hey, we are coming up on 7:45. It is the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. We are basically moving along this morning with a little bit of duct tape, and we're pulling a little MacGyver, but bit by bit we'll get things back to normal, so we appreciate your patience. Thanks for being a part of a very special day today as we do remember 9/11. 97.3 The Sky.
September 11th is forever in our memories. The heroes from that day remind us of the strength of America.
Each of us will remember what happened that day and to whom it happened. We'll remember the moment the news came. Some will carry memories of a face and a voice gone forever.
We're coming up on 7:49 now, 11 away from 8 o'clock. Greg Cassidy here, along with, of course, Bob Rose. And, yeah, a very special day and a sad but commemorative day that, obviously, Bob, we as adults and of a certain age will never forget.
No, it's burned into our memories for sure. And, you know, it's one thing to kind of re-experience it, re-examine it. But, you know, I reiterate, where do we go from here? Because 25 years later, we're still fighting against terrorism. And, you know, if in the year, you know, 2026, mm-hmm. as human beings, have we not advanced to the point where we're not trying to kill each other? It just feels so like 8th century to begin with, you know? And obviously, with nuclear power, several nations have enough to blow the world up 100 times over.
Right.
Thankfully, it hasn't come to that. But still, like, you know, this old-fashioned tanks and shooting at each other and shooting missiles. And it almost seems bizarre. Like, are we advancing as a human race or not?
Well, we've had that conversation when we talk about, you know, Putin and Ukraine. And that is one kind of scenario. You mentioned 8th century. Stop and think about Middle East terrorism. I mean, seriously, you've got a country like Iran where its leadership is doing the same kind of stuff they would have done 1,000 years ago. And it's like, what is your purpose? What is your intent? What is your mindset that terrorism is your daily way of life, when multiple times over the years you've been offered alternatives? And, you know, we've talked about how the world does not understand our level of understanding freedom because our country was founded on that, so we grew up with it, and they have not. But they are still living almost in a Stone Age mentality of terror. And what does it get them? They're not going to take over the world. They're not going to... Well, I guess maybe little Trojan horse, they're moving into America in politics. But in the big scheme of things, what is their goal? What is their mindset? What is it they hope to accomplish by just killing random people in other countries?
Well, it's, you know, look, it's a culture. It's a cultural thing. When you're raised that, you know, these certain people, whatever religious or whatever political, they're the enemy, and they instill hate in their offspring. And, you know, wherever that happens, look, we had generations of, you know, we're taught, you know, to hate blacks, or hate anybody that's different from
that's
you.
True.
And we treated them, you know, effectively that like they were subhuman.
Right. You're right.
And it's just atrocious. But again, you know, America kind of led the way in helping to repair those kinds of things and looking at humanity differently. But yet we still don't, you know, we don't have all the tools at our disposal, you know, to get the job done. And when our young people, when you see them on college campuses and how they just don't understand some of the, what I would call, you know, the fundamentals, the basic fundamentals,
right.
They start out with the idea that America's bad. We're not perfect, but when you start out with the idea that we're bad, that's going to change your whole world view, and not for the better. And it's not going to be an accurate view.
Well, stop and think about that, because this timeline is kind of going through my head. You're talking about people that are of a certain age. Some of them are in college. Some of them have been through college. That has been the message that they have gotten. It was during Obama. And if I'm being accusatory, fine. Live with it. Get over it. That was when, from the White House, we had this... You know, we're not the greatest. This is the first time I'm proud of America. That kind of garbage came from the Obamas, and that's what trickled down and filtered into our society. It filtered into the kids and the young people at that time. It filtered into our educational institutions around the country. To me, just like a lot of the BLM garbage and that kind of stuff, that unrest within our country, that's where a lot of that, I think, started, and that is where why a lot of times I think we're where we are right now.
I think the term that we fail to put out there often enough is the term American exceptionalism.
Yes.
Yeah, and Obama did that. He goes, well, every country thinks they're exceptional. Mm-hmm. Well, that may or may not be true, but when you look at world standards, we are exceptional in so many different areas, one of which is we're the babies of the world. Why are we the leaders? What are we doing differently
right.
than other people? Capitalism is one of those things. But a spiritual belief system where, you know, live and let live prevails, where forgiveness prevails, you know, love your enemy, mm-hmm. that whole idea, that whole concept, that's one of the major reasons why we're the best in the world. And why would you ever shrink back from that? Instead, I would build upon that. Yes, Trump maybe overdoes it with hyperbole from time to time, but his basic kind of his core believes that America is truly great and that yes. we can be greater. We can always improve. That idea of American exceptionalism is very, very powerful. Again, doesn't mean we're perfect. Doesn't even mean we're necessarily better in many ways. Mm-hmm. But there are things about our nation that truly are exceptional. Where can you come here and live in abject poverty? And through one generation, let alone two, you can rise through and really live what most of us call the idea of the American dream.
Absolutely. I don't think we would have thought we would get that negative message from the person who's supposed to be the commander-in-chief, the leader of America, the leader of the free world. Why would you not, when you're in that position, want to be a Ronald Reagan where it's God bless America and we are good and we feed the world and we clothe the world and we are exceptional? It lets you know that his background and his mindset and his influences were not the same as ours.
Well, I tell you what I've done about it. I boycotted eating dog since Obama
well,
ate dog. I'm never going to eat dog.
You got to have standards, Bob.
So, I think sorry. I have to lighten things up just a
yes.
little bit because it is the 25th anniversary of 9/11.
Yes,
and we are going to have plenty of serious issues coming up, but
sure.
I've got to tell you something that we're going to look forward to is the Gators playing. You know, all is well when we hear the Gators and playing in the swamp. That's going to be 5:30 in the swamp tomorrow. And listen, don't underestimate the enemy, Greg Campbell. Don't underestimate him. You know why?
Why is that?
Because I heard that they're good.
Oh, so you're saying they've got it in the can.
I've been working on that for hours, Greg, hours.
Yeah, that first hour we weren't on, you were sitting there going, what can I say? I've got to have a line. There's got to be a line for the day, and that was it.
Well, we have a lot more information. We have all your top stories. And, of course, the number one thing is remembering 9/11 25 years ago today.
Absolutely. We are coming up on 7:57. It is the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. And, stick with us. Appreciate your patience for our little technical issues earlier this morning and, okay, all night long. But we appreciate it. Thanks for being a part of it. 97.3 The Sky.
That day is a testament to the strength and courage of so many.
These heinous acts of violence, they're an assault on the security and the freedom of every American citizen.
September 11th, 25 years later, still feels like yesterday. We all remember where we were, and it's a reminder of how much has changed since then.
Wow. Yes, we do. It is 8:07. It is the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy here. A very special day, Bob, and man, 25 years. It seems like yesterday, and yet it seems like forever at the same time.
Yeah, because it is both. I mean, we have a whole generation of young people that are not even that young anymore.
Right.
That they weren't around when 9/11 occurred. So there is a little bit of a separation between our experiences on that level. Mm-hmm. And I tell you what, there's so many ways in which you can show respect for what occurred. One of them is a ceremony that's going to begin here in just a few minutes at 8:30. That'll be at the Ocala Marion County Veterans Memorial Park. They do so many things related to our veterans, first responders, and, of course, this is another one there at on East 14th King Street in Ocala, and they invite all residents out because it has been 25 years to the day of these events that have occurred, and, you know, a lot of lost lives, and this ceremony gives an opportunity for the community to pause and reflect and remember those who were lost, and also a reminder of the people who run toward buildings that are collapsing, that run toward danger. Mm-hmm. And we never should lose sight of all that they have given as well.
Well, you know, and that is a group. They mentioned it at the top of the hour news, and I was actually going to bring it up, so it was interesting timing. We know about the nearly 3,000 that died that day. Sometimes we forget that there have been literally about 9,000 who have died since due to cancers, lung issues. I mean, you got to remember when those towers were built, they used a lot of materials that weren't good for us that we didn't even really know at the time. And I had friends that fortunately, none of them that I know of that were firefighters, they were volunteer firemen, and they went up and worked there for a few days. But think about that. Almost three times as many people have lost their lives because of the issues of all those materials that they were breathing in. And it's just like hard to imagine. It's like it happened on that day, but it's been going on ever since.
Well, then, you know, Afghanistan to follow. All of the loss of life related to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, it was a huge tragedy and one that certainly didn't end on that day, to say the very least. You know, just to mention, there are a lot of things going on. Gators are playing in the Swamp on Saturday. The 49ers beat the Rams last night 27-7. The Jags are taking on Cleveland this weekend in Jacksonville. That's at 1 o'clock game for the Bucks against Cincinnati. And the Dolphins play the Raiders at Raiders Sunday at 4:25. And then one of our hometown heroes, Ben Shelton, who played tennis for Buchholz, won a national championship at Florida, is in the U.S. Open, and it's right down to the semis now. He takes on fellow American Francis Tiafoe. So yeah, there's lots of things to look forward to throughout the weekend.
Well, and just the fact that you're talking about those kinds of things, that is America. That is our daily American way of life. That is the entertainment, the fun, the challenges, the freedom that this country was founded on, to live our lives to our fullest, to enjoy our lives to our fullest. We're not guaranteed anything by our Constitution, except our rights are backed and protected by our country, theoretically, to be able to strive for whatever we want. Again, we're not guaranteed some success. We're guaranteed the right to pursue it and to pursue our happiness, and that is our American way of life.
Well, you think about a large percentage of the world's population, their biggest goal today will be to find fresh water,
yep,
will be to find edible food, will be to try to protect their families from all kinds of threats. Mm-hmm. You know, that will be high on the priority list for so much of the world's population, where we have been blessed, and our founding fathers and what has followed, to where we have so much extra time. We can go to these events. We can sit home and watch TV if we choose. We can travel and explore different areas. While, again, a large population of the world is just going to be happy if they can have shelter and food and clean water. It's quite a different dynamic.
We do take it for granted. And just, you know, the irony of the timing, too, because, you know, October's coming up. We always do the pumpkin patch at our church. And a lot of that is actually feeding people in Guatemala. And we always send a construction crew, if you will, as part of our team. And they build, we call it a house. It would not be a house by American standards, but compared to living on dirt with a cardboard wall, if you have that, and maybe some cloth, to know that now you're in something that has a concrete pad and that it's actually made of wood and actually has a roof, we forget how much of the world would be so happy just to have that.
Well, and just think about all the outreach that America and Americans have done directly and indirectly through our government expenditures, through charities, people directly given through churches, what a difference we have made around the world.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the kinds of stories that should be talked about and taught in schools. Once again, getting back to that idea of American exceptionalism, that needs to be, and that's one of the things that President Trump lit the fire on. That's why he, you know, won two elections. It wasn't just about closing off the borders and all that. It was about making America great again. It's not just, it's not that we weren't great per se for a while. He just wants to remind people that we're great and instill in them that, hey, man, we've got our warts, we've got our flaws, we're not perfect, but really, look around the world. We are the best. If not for us, who's going to fight to keep the light of freedom, true freedom? Who's going to keep that alive if not for us?
Mm-hmm.
And while I say that, you know, at the same time, 25 years after being attacked by terrorists, here we are. I've got a story today. Apparently, Iran is back producing ballistic missiles. Despite all of the things that we have done, a report has just come out that they are actually still able to produce them. And that, so, you know,
it's frustrating.
President Trump promised us we're not going to have foreign entanglements, and it's not his fault. Here we are. Well, it is his fault. He made the call. He drew a line in the sand.
Sure.
He wasn't going to kick the can down the road. He said, look, these people are serious. They're crazy. They're very close to having a nuclear weapon, and we need to do something about it now before, you know, there's a mushroom cloud and, you know, radioactivity, who knows how far it could spread.
Well, and the people that like to, like, scoff at that, I think if you would just stop and remember 9/11, all these things we've talked about, all these examples, and a lot of it rooted in the Middle East, that is the mindset we're dealing with. And if you don't believe that, if they would do it with a couple of planes back then, give some of them nuclear weaponry, what do you think they're going to do?
I don't think it's that difficult to connect the dots.
Yeah.
And we have a president strong enough to, you know, to take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, and I think that a lot of these neighboring nations, you know, the Gulf states, are kind of seeing, you know, as much as we may be hated, sometimes on the surface, sometimes at a deeper level, quietly, sometimes we're quietly hated by folks in that region. I think they're beginning to realize, you know, we're not really the bad guys. And in fact, they have bad guys living in their own neighborhood that seek to destroy them or anybody that that gets in their way or doesn't do their will.
Yeah, but that is obviously a very strong point. Hey, we are coming up on 8:16. A very special day as we commemorate 9/11, 2001. It's the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. Thanks for being a part of the show. 97.3, The Sky.
September 11th is a day that we all remember, even 25 years later.
We will read all these names. We will linger over them and learn their stories.
The heroes who stepped up remind us of America's strength every single day.
May he bless the souls of the departed. And may he always guide our country. God bless America.
It is 8:21, a very special day to remember, well, 25 years ago. It is the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. And Bob, I tell you, it is just amazing when we think about how much time and how much has changed. And yet we're also talking about how little has changed in some ways at the same time.
Yeah, there is one of the things I was doing was a little bit of math. So it only took me an hour to do this. So World War II ended in 1945.
Right.
Excuse me. And if we, so let's go 25 years, like they're looking at the 25th anniversary of the ending of World War II. That was 1970.
Right.
So that just, so you look at that and you say, okay, 9/11 happened 25 years ago, and here we are in the year 2026. Can you imagine how lives changed between 1945 and 1970? And here we are with kind of like another leap in time, if you will. But yet, unfortunately, we're still fighting basically the same enemy that attacked us on 9/11.
It'd be like if we were kids and World War II was still going on.
In many ways, yeah, that would be, yeah, that's the parallel that you could kind of draw from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in 9/11 was not World War II. The loss of life is not comparable,
right?
But just a major tragic event felt, at least around the world, and a sense of sacrifice by many. So it kind of echoes that to some extent in my mind. Also, you know, as we also want to be living in the present, you know, just last night, Vice President J.D. Vance, you know, given a heck of a speech, this guy is really coming into his own, and the folks were fired up at the American Airlines Center, and apparently a heckler got his attention.
Oh, no.
This bozo was waving, like, Mexican and even Palestinian flags.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, and the cameras didn't really catch the guys. You know, the guy that was doing this. Mm-hmm. But J.D. Vance told people, he said, what the people at home missed is that we just had a protester interrupting us and waving the Mexican flag. He said, well, my friend, if you love Mexico so much, get your ASS over there and I'll buy you the plane ticket.
Wow. I love it.
And of course, you know, the crowd went wild.
Oh,
So, you know, look, 9/11. Always should be remembered, and we should treat it as the solemn thing that it is, but we should also examine it from different perspectives and not lose sight of where we are now in the present,
right,
and nationally where we are headed as a nation.
Well, and a lot of things come to mind, because we are probably dealing more now. We talk about all the illegals. Again, it's not just Mexico. It literally is around the world. It's the Middle East. It's you name it. We need to get back to those basics. And I know maybe they've, you know, given Trump a hard time, call him a nationalist and all these kind of things. But I don't think there's anything wrong with us getting back to our basics of life in America, where if you want to live our way of life, okay, we are a free country. You can come here legally. You can adapt. You can be a part of the American way of life. That's what it was set up to do. It wasn't set up to come in, live off American taxpayers, bring in all of your own culture and try to change ours. I think we really need a reset on this. And maybe it sounds hard or cruel or harsh, but we shouldn't be where we are right now dealing with the things we're dealing right now if our politicians were strong.
Wow, you just nailed it. That's it. You know, if we had more folks in Congress like a Kat Kamik, and I'm not, you know, just, you know, blowing smoke. I mean, she gets it.
Yes.
And we need more Americans representing us, Americans, and representing us first and foremost. But embrace immigrants, but embrace the legal immigrants.
Yes.
And that's one of the things we have to clarify is, you know, those of us who support President Trump and Trump himself, we are not anti-immigration at all. We're anti-illegal immigration. We don't feel like we should feel guilty about who we let in and who we don't.
No.
I mean, that goes back to the beginning of time, and we've made reference to a Trojan horse. Man, the biggest Trojan horse of all time known to humanity was the 4 years under Joe Biden, where we had open borders, not even having a clue of who was coming here. We clamped down. The government told everybody, hey, COVID, you got to get your shots. You got to get your shots or you're going to lose your job.
Right.
You got to get your shots and you can't go to church, but you can go to a liquor store. I mean, the government clamped down. But at the meantime, they were allowing millions of people to flow across their borders and they weren't forcing them to get the shot. In other words, even back then, illegals were taking precedent and first in line in front of Americans. And you could look at sanctuary cities and towns today, and it's still the same way. Why aren't our politicians representing us as Americans as first and foremost? Now, clearly some are, but a lot of folks on the left are definitely not.
Yeah, it is such a different mindset, and I've got some thoughts on that I will get into. You're listening to The Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. A very special day as we do commemorate 9/11, but also look at both sides of the coin. Are there things that we should be doing different? Are there things that we should do different in the future? As we analyze where we are today, I think it's time for maybe a little readjustment. You're listening to The Bob Rose Show. Thanks for being a part of it today. 97.3 The Sky.
A free American people will not be intimidated, nor will we be defeated.
We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
We need to remember those heroes on that day, September 11th, and those that protect our freedom today.
It's 8:35 now, 25 away from 9 o'clock, a very special day, a day of remembrance. On the Bob Rose Show, I'm Greg Cassidy, and obviously, Bob, a day that we will never forget.
No, and there's an interesting statistic that roughly 83% of Americans that were born before 2001 say they remember exactly where they were and what they were doing when they learned of the attacks, but over a quarter of the U.S. population was born after 9/11. So isn't that interesting that, if you were born before 2001, at least 83% have a pretty strong memory of what took place there. But now we have 25% of our population, all of our future, leaders, mm-hmm. Maybe some even current, but that did not experience that and did not see any of that firsthand.
Yeah, I was talking, I mentioned it the other day, a friend of mine who's, I think he's around 32. So he was a kid, and he was actually, his dad was in the military. He was attending a school on a naval base. And on that day, they cleared them out, came, because again, we didn't know what was going on. So you've got a lot of people in that 30-ish year old range who only remember it from a child's perspective and don't have the full clarity of experiencing it, only hearing about it in history.
And then you have to wonder, look, we've indicted the educational system before, and, this is a great example that they didn't see it or experience it with their own eyes. So what do they rely on? In many cases, education. How did they handle 9/11 in the classroom and post 9/11 when they were dealing with students that were not familiar with it? How did they deal with it? Did they say that, what was it? Was it Canada that said don't refer to 9/11 as a terrorist attack?
Yeah,
that came out recently.
They told their media not to address it that way. That's Canada. Well, what else would you address that as besides a terrorist attack?
That again, it kind of boggles your mind. Whether it's some of these people thinking, and by the way, we'd love to be playing bang on the drum. We'd love to have this be a regular, party Friday kind of a state of mind, and we will. We will get back into that, maybe not on the show this morning, but as a nation, we'll move back into that. But we're still, it's solemn. There's a respectful tone that needs to be taken, but we are also going to deal with, issues as well. For instance, today, if it's treated with respect, maybe they won't have enough time to bash President Trump. And I'm talking about, of course, the media and the lefties. But Trump's resonating with this idea of a $5,000 payout.
Right.
And we talked about that because he mentioned it in his speech the other night. What was it, Wednesday night? Mm-hmm. And he mentioned that. And, of course, I knew it would draw a lot of scrutiny and lefty heads would pop. And it has. But he was being interviewed by one of the major networks. It wasn't Fox. It was one of the alphabets. And he said, he goes, I think we can get this done without Congress. Mm-hmm. But if it comes to that, I think we can get Congress on board. So I thought that was interesting on a couple of different levels. And I just love it when, the left comes out and worries about spending all this extra money. It's like, you're kidding, right?
A little hypocrisy, anyone?
And he mentioned that, the trillions of dollars that are coming investing in the United States,
right,
and that to pay this, dividend is not going to hurt us financially.
Well, again, going back to that hypocrisy, it's like, oh, who are the kings of handouts? Who is trying to get anybody and everybody, you know, to vote for them, to do what they want? This government program, that government program. And what we end up with is now several generations who believed that, who still don't feel like they're appreciated at all. They were just being bought for their vote.
You know, instead of getting $5,000, how about just saying you don't have to pay any federal taxes this year?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
That would have a stimulating effect. And guess what? Only people that are actually producing and getting and paying taxes would be the beneficiaries of that. Would that not be a good idea? Or?
Well, but, you know, stop and think. And again, our brains go a million different directions when we have these conversations. I know how it frustrates people who work very hard and they pay a lot of taxes. And they hope that maybe if I overpaid just a little bit, I will get some of that back. Even though it's still your money, they just borrowed it for free for the last year. The frustration, and this is not against low income, this is not against people who are in these positions, but when they see someone who didn't do all the things they did that year, worked hard the way they did that year, but because the way our tax thing is set up, our tax programs are set up, people who did not even contribute are getting lots of money back because of all the deductions here. And it's like, that doesn't really seem fair either.
Yeah, there's some automatics where, it's advantageous to some of those. And I'm with you. I want people to succeed. I want them to get ahead. And I'm not downing anybody because they're in a rough financial position. Although, if you look at it, in many cases, if not most, a lot of decisions made by that individual cause them to be in the position that they're in.
Right.
But it is interesting that the president, you know, talked about this. I really think that is more of a strategy. Mm-hmm. A strategy that says, oh, you want to give stuff away? I'll tell you how to give stuff away.
Uh-huh.
Just as more of a response
to
the idea of socialist, oh, yeah, some rich people are going to pay for everything. What do you want for free? Kind of taking a page out of their playbook a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how serious he is about actually following through. But from a strategy standpoint, it is interesting. And it does take a lot of the wind out of the lefties' argument that, oh, yeah, we got to penalize the rich and everybody else can live off of that. It's ridiculous.
Well, and if nothing else, it starts a conversation like the one we're having right now.
Absolutely. We are, in a solemn way, we're looking at 9/11, 25 years to the day later. And this day remains the deadliest terror attack in modern history. You've had 2,977 people who were killed directly.
Mm-hmm.
2,606 at the World Trade Center, 246 across four hijacked planes, 125 at the Pentagon in Washington. And then when you look at the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, over 7,000 U.S. military personnel were killed, another 53,560 wounded across both of those missions. And today's anniversary comes 5 years after the Taliban, which harbored al-Qaeda, regained control of Afghanistan under Joe Biden following the withdrawal of those U.S. and NATO troops in 2021. And that could have been done in a more haphazard, wrong way. I mean, that was horrendous what happened when we left Afghanistan on so many different levels, including Bagram Air Base that we basically gave away with billions of dollars in armaments and other things. And we literally have evidence today that is exactly what the Taliban is doing. They're using all of our military stuff we left behind.
That just one more frustration, I guess, when we think about how important voting is. When you've got the wrong administration, because then I say it's the administration. It starts at the top, starts with the president, but then it's who is running the military, who is running all our federal agencies. when you get a lot of really bad decisions made in those circumstances, it lets you, just if nothing else, be reminded how important it is. Hey, we are coming up on 8:45. Close to 15 away from 9 o'clock. It is a special day of remembrance, but also acknowledging the good, the bad, the ugly of, you know, how situations like this happen, how we deal with it, and how we move forward. It's all on the Bob Rose Show, 97.3 The Sky.
September 11th is forever in our memories. The heroes from that day remind us of the strength of America.
Each of us will remember what happened that day. And to whom it happened. Remember the moment the news came. Some will carry memories of a face and a voice gone forever.
Good morning. It's 8:50 now. It's 10 away from 9 o'clock. It is the Bob Rose Show. I am Greg Cassidy. You know, Bob, we've talked about so many angles this morning, where we were when we first heard the news, the things that we thought were happening versus what was really happening. I know that for you and I both, we lived in major cities at the time. You were in Orlando. I was in St. Louis. St. Louis being also an area where there's a lot of military activity going on. McDonnell Douglas, they build things. But one of the strangest things I know, and it had to be the same for you because we both had international airports in our backyard, was once they grounded everybody, it was the strangest thing the next morning for me driving to the radio station and not seeing anything in the sky. That was a strange feeling.
Yeah, same thing in Orlando, which obviously is very heavy traveled airport. And yeah, it was the same thing. There was this quietness and this stillness, but yet you couldn't really appreciate it because also in the air was, you know, there was a sense of kind of anxiousness. Mm-hmm. And since I was like in the backyard of, you know, Disney's and Universal's where many people travel to, the thought as soon as we started to kind of figure out what was going on was that, wow, how vulnerable are those places?
Right.
What a target they could be for terrorist activity. And of course, everybody knew somebody that, you know, you worked at the park and you knew people were there on a regular basis. And so, yeah, there was definitely a sense of concern as far as those places being targeted.
Now, aren't those, at least I thought at the time, weren't, like Disney, for instance, weren't those declared no-fly zones?
Well, remember, we had a no-fly zone everywhere for a while. After that, I honestly can't recall exactly what precisely what actions were taken, but that does ring a bell now that you say that.
And certainly understand. I mean, because again, when you're talking about terrorism, it's only they don't accomplish anything unless they can shock our culture, unless they can shock our daily way of life. And obviously, we were concerned at the time about, you know, amusement parks, you know, baseball stadiums, anything that could affect. Well again, you stop and think about the towers themselves. That is where international business took place in America. It was those two towers.
Yeah, and you think about it, you know, what could have come after that or what we speculated might come after that. And you have to wonder what the mindset was of the terrorists, you know, behind the planning and all that. What did they think? How did they think that we were going to react? Did they think that would be utter chaos, which maybe in a lot of cultures it would have been? But as Americans, man, we turned that around.
Oh, yeah.
You saw Republicans and Democrats literally holding hands, praying together on the steps of the Capitol.
Yes.
I don't think that the terrorists expected that. You had Americans of every stripe coming together, looking out for each other. Mm-hmm. The sense of unity was extremely powerful. I hope we could get back to that without it having to be a traumatic event that sparks that kind of idea of unity.
Yeah, we really did look at each other differently. And there for those first few days, it was still a very protective way. I just was actually reading a post of a friend of mine. He had been flying to England, and literally they had just landed when this all happened. And so that was affecting some travel plans, getting back to America. But he was ministering at some countries over in other countries. And it was interesting, and he's a good-sized fella. And when they were boarding for their next flight, when they were able to do that there and go to whatever their next stop was, they actually, because of his size, they ask him to, as a last line of defense, sit in the row near the cockpit.
Wow.
And I thought, who would have imagined that? Who would have thought about that? I remember in the mid-90s when I was traveling to Ukraine and Romania, that was the first time that I saw people in fatigues with automatic weapons, rifles, in an airport. Because we didn't have that way of life here that was normal for a lot of folks around the world.
I was reading up on a story, and it was really Franklin Graham who was sharing this, and he calls on America to turn back to God 25 years after 9/11. We still need his help today. And what really kind of it brought this whole idea and thought kind of to life, if you will, is a story of somebody who was trapped underneath all of that. Her name is Janelle Guzman McMillan. She was trapped under the rubble for 27 hours and lived to talk about it. And she shared her experience. At one point, she said she could no longer endure. And she said, God, are you listening to me? Please show me a sign. Then something happened she can still not explain. Someone grabbed me by my hand. He told me that his name is Paul. He said that Paul held her hand and reassured her. So 27 hours beneath the World Trade Center, and she said, Paul says, you're going to be fine. Help is on the way. I'm not going to let you go. Well, guess what? There was nobody named Paul that was there.
Wow.
And she soon did, right after that, receive help, and she said, I believe Paul was an angel looking out for me. I was not hallucinating. I was not dreaming. I knew the conversation that I had. Something happened under that rubble, she added. I found Jesus that day. And, you know, that's one of, there are so many stories related to this. And I don't know if it's, you know, a silver lining type thing, but What an experience to go through, and sharing that with other people, how she may have changed a lot of lives.
Well, and we hear so many stories about, you know, last-minute decisions of why someone did or did not get on a plane because of something that happened, or they didn't go to work that day. And you realize how all their lives would have been totally different had that one decision in their life been made differently. We are coming up on 8:57. It is a very special day of remembrance of 9/11. I'm Greg Cassidy. It is the Bob Rose Show, and we thank you for being a part of today, and we thank you for remembering. Thanks for being a part of it. 97.3, The Sky.
That day is a testament to the strength and courage of so many.
These heinous acts of violence, they're an assault on the security and the freedom of every American citizen.
September 11th, 25 years later, still feels like yesterday. We all remember where we were, and it's a reminder of how much has changed since then.
It is 9:07. It is the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. And yes, we are remembering today. And obviously, Bob, you know, both of us working in radio at that time will never forget where we were, as most folks, I think, never will if they were old enough to remember that day.
Absolutely. I was working radio in Orlando in the afternoon, talk radio. And, you know, I had to take my then wife to an orthopedic appointment, a follow-up on she'd broken her ankle. So, we're getting a checkup on that. And we knew the orthopedic surgeon. He was a friend of ours that, you know, I actually played softball with, Dr. Nowicki, really nice guy. And so, you know, we had a friendly relationship. And, you know, he comes into the room and says, hey, a plane just hit the World Trade Center. And I go, man, I wonder what that's all about. Mm-hmm. Thought maybe a small plane, you know, it's a huge building. You can't miss it. But, you know, if you have a medical emergency and you're the pilot, things happen.
Yeah.
And that was what first drew my attention. And then when he came in the second time and said, another plane just hit the building, and these are not little planes.
Right.
Then I went into mode of, okay, what do I need to do? I probably need to go get on the air and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember as we were driving there to the appointment, it was just one of those perfect clear days. It was one of those days where you could say, hey, even here in the heat of Central Florida, today feels like a fall day.
Yeah.
It was lack of humidity, very clear skies, not a cloud in the sky. It was just one of those absolutely gorgeous days that made you think, gosh, today's going to be a great day.
Yeah.
And then, things unfolded.
I was working at a contemporary Christian station in St. Louis at the time, and we didn't have, because we didn't really think that we needed it, we didn't have video TV screens in our studio. Those were in our newsroom with our news person, and I could hear her through a little speaker just to the left of me, and she said at that moment that a plane had hit the tower, and we, like you, everybody thinks, okay, somebody messed up, it's big buildings, but it's a busy, air traffic is crazy up there. And then realized it was a jet, and then the second one, and then everything kind of went into crazy kind of semi-panic mode as you're trying to figure out, okay, what is happening? I will never forget, because all of a sudden parents were rushing to pick up their kids at school because they didn't know. We didn't know how widespread this was. We didn't know, are they going to be attacking every American city? We had military bases around the St. Louis area. We built military aircraft there. We're thinking, okay, hey, Missouri is a target because we've got all these things, because we really just didn't know.
No, we didn't. And that was bad enough to have these jets flying in, and we knew this was not an accident at that point. But it still, for me, wasn't within the realm of that the tower could collapse. I remember right away, because I had to prep to do my show.
Yeah.
I'm reading that, these buildings were built with a certain, to withstand a jet aircraft actually crashing into them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the engineering was done, planes were, a lot smaller.
Right.
Well, quite a bit smaller and less fuel capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So they, and of course, it was only guesswork anyway, from an engineering standpoint, what they could sustain.
Sure.
But as it turns out, these planes loaded with fuel, I mean, when you saw that tower come crashing down, that was just a whole nother level of a surreal thing that you're living through, almost a pinch yourself moment.
Right. Well, again, stop and think how iconic those buildings were. You cannot watch a movie that was filmed mm-hmm. in New York before that day that did not include a picture of the skyline that included the Twin Towers.
Oh, yeah. That's what makes that skyline so epic. And, unforgettable, because that's not duplicated anywhere even close around the world.
Now, we did have the hindsight, though, if you stop and remember, the Empire State Building back in the day was hit by a plane, which I think probably, in a sense, gave, builders the forethought to go, oh, these things can happen. But like you said, jets got a lot bigger from in the 90s when these buildings were, were being built.
And I don't think anybody thought, can they sustain a crash?
Yeah.
Didn't think of it as the plane being weaponized.
No.
They just thought, a random fog conditions, lack of instrumentation, just a perfect storm of, errors, mistakes, or things that go on.
Mm-hmm.
Not thinking, well, someday somebody might actually try to steer a jet full of people right into the middle of one of these buildings.
Now, we grew up in an era of hijackings, and that's what a lot of the security things started for us growing up at airports. Because, face it, 60s, early 70s, they usually ended well, though. The people who would hijack a plane would, and it could be a passenger jet, they would get to the country they wanted to be in, they would get off, and everybody went home. We never thought of, like you said, it progressing as an act of terrorism in this sense. And, of course, then that changed everything at American airports and airports around the world.
Well, and if we're going to be students of history and use it to learn about the future, what are we not thinking about now that perhaps we should be a little bit more proactive in, what could be the next target? We have to think way outside the box.
Well, because the terrorists have a whole different they have a, obviously have a whole different way of thinking anyway. They don't think like Americans. They are thinking very negative. They are thinking very bad things. And then they are always, you know, analyzing what we do, trying to figure out how to get around it. And that's why, you know, the whole the shoe bomber, we had that to deal with, and the liquids. And so they're always coming up with something to take advantage of our free way of life, that they can use that, that then causes a terrorist act to happen, but then also ends up changing our life again because, okay, I'm getting ready to go on a plane at the end of October. Here's all these things we're looking at of what you can and can't do, what you can and can't carry, what has to be checked, what can't be checked. And so we didn't even think about – before it was like, okay, don't take any guns and no bombs on the plane. That was pretty much it.
Yeah, that is correct. As we revisit 9/11 25 years ago today, people are dealing with this in different ways. Memorials all around the country, including a very, very large gathering in New York City. The students at Embry-Riddle, the ROTC students, are honoring the 9/11 first responders with memorial stair climbing. So they're doing 2,100 steps in honor of those first responders at the Daytona International Speedway, and big events are happening in places all around the nation, obviously.
And so, yeah, we remember the 3,000, almost 3,000 that died on that day, but also, again, it's easy to forget because we don't hear about it. Nearly 9,000 people have died since then because of responding, of being there, of breathing in the chemicals and the things those buildings were built with and insulated with. And so multiple types of cancers we never even thought about before then. And we want to remember those families because while it may not have been day of, a lot of them had to live with those things for many years until they lost their loved one.
Well, Ronald Reagan, you know, in his great words, you know, told us that, you know, this kind of freedom that we enjoy is only a generation away from being lost. Mm-hmm. And those words ring true, and there are different markers. And, you know, 2001, November the October the 11th is definitely, I'm sorry, September the 11th. It's one of those days that is kind of marked as one of those days where things could have gone differently. We could have reacted differently. And instead, we got united. We looked out for each other, and both sides of the aisle came together. And that's at least one of the positive takeaways, if we can find one of those.
No, and I think we need to, again, like you said earlier, we don't need a tragedy to hopefully bring us together, but we've got to find a way to be that America once again. We are coming up on 9:16. We are celebrating those lost, those lives, that special day that we will not forget, September 11th of 2001. It's the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy, and you're listening to 97.3 The Sky.
September 11th is a day that we all remember, even 25 years later.
We will read all these names. We will linger over them and learn their stories.
The heroes who stepped up remind us of America's strength every single day.
May he bless the souls of the departed, and may he always guide our country. God bless America.
Approaching 9:21 on a very solemn day today in the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. And we're talking about all kinds of things regarding that day, where we were, the things that we remember, the feelings that we experienced, the things that have changed, our day-to-day life, the things that are different. But also, Bob, I wonder, we touched on this just a little bit earlier, it's like, what do we need to do different in the future as we look at what is now this new world order and the Iranians, all the terrorist groups that they fund? It's like, do we need to look differently at them and as we have Americans defending them from time to time? It just blows our minds. Do we need to deal with them differently and in that more kinetic way that we talk about sometimes?
Yes, that is one of my things that I – maybe we need to find a new path.
Yeah.
The problem is some cultures, some folks don't understand anything other than sheer strength and destruction.
Right.
And that, and how do you overcome that in a more cerebral way? How do you overcome that and say your life doesn't have to be all about hating and wanting to kill or take over, you know, another culture or another religion? You know, live and let live. You know, the greatest warrior is the one who conquers himself. You know, the idea of jihad really was supposed to embrace the internal enemies that we all possess, those of like greed and temptation that keeps us from being living to our best human potential. That's what jihad was really supposed to be all about, is taking on yourself. And so we all need to have some self-determination that we're going to try to be day in and day out a better version of ourselves. And then how that's reflected nationally. We have been a very kind and very giving country. We don't go around looking for fights. They have been brought to us. And so moving forward, I'm not sure. Changing cultures is not easy. We found that lesson out many times, including in Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
When we said, you're free, you're free. And they go, all right, let's go kick each other's butts all day in the streets. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
You're missing the point. And they're like, no, this is the point. This is our culture. This is what we do. This for generations. This is how they've been raised. So I don't know, but I can tell you this, that in our nation, you know, if you don't want to accept something like American exceptionalism, you know, that's one thing. But if you want to root for bad guys that want to kill, in other words, there is nothing that should be accomplished politically through violence, especially violence against innocent people.
Right.
That's where you have to draw the line. But there are some people in our country that they side on the side of terrorists. They think that, well, you know, you have to fight against the oppressors, and this is a way to do it. Well, if you're, are your oppressors the innocent people among you? No. So, but you attack innocent people to what? To get attention to your cause? I don't know where anything bad has happened to an innocent person. And I said, hey, man, thanks for making a good point. Now I'm on your side. Let's go kill some more innocent people.
Right.
There's no logic behind any of this.
Well, unfortunately, it has crept into different ways of American life. I'm taking a little bunny trail here. You stop and look at the on-the-street assassination of Mangione, where we are at a point where there are an alarmingly high percentage of Americans who think that violence and death is okay if you disagree enough. The killing of Charlie Kirk. We talked about that yesterday. Mangione, walking down the street, family man. Yeah, you're a CEO of a healthcare company. And yet there are Americans who defend the killer. What has happened? What has trickled down into our society where not only on an international level, but a local level in our own backyard, they think it's okay? That's a mindset that has been allowed to grow in our country, and that's really sad.
Hey, let me paint a picture for you from a police reporter that was on the job in Manhattan that fateful day 25 years ago. I was getting ready for my job as a police reporter for the New York Post. I saw on TV that a plane had hit the World Trade Center. By the time I got to Manhattan, the buildings had already fallen. As I got closer to the devastation, the visibility was less and less, and it was like a dense fog hung in the air. People were walking in 6 inches of ash, the results of tons of pulverized concrete from the destroyed and collapsed buildings. When I got to Church Street, it looked like a scene from a movie where planets collided and nothing was left. The only problem was there was no director yelling, cut. This was real. On my right, dozens of ambulances were lined up with their doors open, waiting for the injured who never came. Coffee carts were sitting empty, donuts and bagels covered in ash. I thought just yesterday, you know, I was in Century 21. Now its windows were broken and it was badly damaged. Streets were buried beneath dust, twisted steel and concrete. Some piles were over 50 feet high. Piles,
wow.
50 feet high. Smoke hung over the ruins, creating a cloud that covered as far as I could see, which wasn't very far. And the smell was nauseating. I was covered in dust from head to toe. I walked around. I stepped over body parts and saw a wheel from one of the planes. I covered hundreds of crime scenes all over the city, reported on serial killers, talked to murderers in jail. I remembered when 87 bodies were laid out in a gas station on Southern Boulevard in the Bronx after the Happy Land fire. And goes back into all the other memories, including the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. And this, those things did not prepare me for that day. I mean, it's painting a picture, because for most of us, the vast majority of us, all we'll ever see is whatever film footage was taken. And you know that when things are immense, it's like taking pictures of a mountain. Mm-hmm. You can't truly capture the essence of what it was like, and it through film, it just doesn't do it justice. It was so much bigger and so much more tragic.
Wow. Dramatic memories from anybody who was there, near there, during the event, after the event. You know, firefighters and first responders from around the country were going up for weeks and weeks and weeks after that, doing what they could. It looked like something that could never be cleaned up. And yet, here we are with a brand new tower, the memorial, the museum, and 25 years of history to look back on and think, what do we do now? How do we move forward? It's a very special day. Thank you for remembering. 928, The Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. Thanks for listening to 97.3 The Sky.
A free American people will not be intimidated, nor will we be defeated.
We will not tire, we will not falter, and we will not fail.
We need to remember those heroes on that day, September 11th, and those that protect our freedom today.
Approaching 9:37, it is the Bob Rose Show. I'm Greg Cassidy. Appreciate you listening today as we all remember where we were, commemorate those lives who were lost. And it is certainly, Bob, one of those things that, just like maybe folks a little older than us, remember where they were when JFK was assassinated. For a lot of folks, generationally, 9/11 is something that they will never forget.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting analogy, JFK. You're right. We were just... wee little babies. Mm-hmm. And you knew that was a punch in the gut to Americans. You know, even people who didn't vote for this guy, still he had these, you know, incredible qualities about him, a great sense of charisma. Mm-hmm. And he was a younger guy. And, you know, the future of America, we'd turned the corner after World War II. We saw the economic growth of the 50s and beginning of the 60s. And I got to tell you, everybody, you know, the mood, from my understanding, talking to my parents, was, you know, people were pretty upbeat. You know, the future just looked so bright. And that was one of those moments that was really a kick in the gut. And that loss was felt and felt for a while. But it didn't have, other than that Zapruder film or whatever, there just wasn't the pictures like the world we live in with cameras and video today.
Right.
And what we experienced as 9/11 was literally unfolding in live time in front of the eyes of the world. That part of it is, you know, nothing can serve as an example to parallel that, I don't think.
And so we are, again, that slightly younger generation. We would have seen those buildings being built at certain points of our life. And then, again, as I mentioned earlier, any film, any TV show ever shot with any scene in New York City, you had to include those towers, just as you would have the Empire State Building decades earlier, because that was such an iconic part of America. And you didn't think of anything but New York City structurally, because that was just so outstanding and amazing.
And if you're one of the families that was directly touched by this terrorist attack, I don't think that, you know, those wounds will never truly heal.
No.
Young people, you know, what if you were 10 or 11? You're old enough to kind of understand a lot of things. And then you lose, let's say, a mother or a father due to that tragedy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to stick with you. And then you find out that here we are 25 years later, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is still alive and being held in Guantanamo Bay along with four of his alleged Al-Qaeda cronies. That I wonder what that does. That certainly can't be a good feeling or a feeling of allowing some healing to take place. And some of the people responsible for it, they still have their lives.
It makes you wonder why. And maybe we've just not asked the right people. Why is that? I mean, that is a very legitimate question that you bring up.
Well, 9/11, obviously complicated. Terrorism and all the laws on the books and all that stuff, you know, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. And holding somebody as a warfare combatant and all those things that this was like a first time kind of thing on many different levels. So I know that complicates it. Our legal system is designed to truly protect what could possibly be an innocent person against an innocent person being found guilty. That's mm-hmm. our criminal justice system set up that way to protect everybody. Hopefully you get the guilty and you get it right, but the system does err on the side of, you know, not getting it wrong, so to speak.
True.
I guess that I'm defending some of the reasons why there's been such a delay. But yeah, even when I do that, I say 25 years, enough is enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so then that brings the next question in moving forward, because now we are here 47 years later, still dealing with Iran. We've dealt with all these things, again, primarily the Middle East, again, because an ancient, old school way of thinking, a whole different way of life compared to what we live in America. You mentioned the times we've tried to bring freedom to these countries. They don't want it. They don't understand it. And we can't put our mindset on them. So we almost have to deal with them at their level to make an impact. So I guess the question is, what do we do moving forward when these things happen?
I mean, I touched on this. You know, human nature, it is tricky.
Yeah.
You think of things, it is always simpler to point blame at others for whatever predicament you're in. Blame others that you're not wealthy. Blame others that you're not healthy. Blame others for the condition of your country, its economy, and all of that. Come up with a straw figure. Come up with an enemy. All of that is easier in human nature than it is to really look inside yourself.
Right.
And so as long as a culture, that's why, you know, I have issues with the left, because they want to constantly play the blame game. Oh, don't worry, young man. You're not supposed to read well. You're black. I know I'm oversimplifying, but that's basically the message. Hey, you know what? We're going to give you some extra points on your test because you're black. I mean, how that defies, you know, logic and moving forward. You know, you've got to study. You've got to work hard. You've got to do all the things that you need to do. And if you're allowed to play the blame game, in this case, you know, world politics, oh, the United States is evil. They're our enemy. Really? How exactly does that work? How is America limited what you're doing? We didn't pick your leaders. You did. If you live under oppression or a strong religious kind of rule, that's up to you. We don't have anything to do with that. Obviously, it gets very, very complicated. But again, you have to question, how is taking innocent lives mm-hmm. make your life better, so to speak? How does that work? It generally doesn't.
No, but I guess if you convince generationally, you convince people of your way of life. Now, we look at Iran as an example. Before 47 years ago, it wasn't a bad place to live. For a Middle Eastern country, a very Western style of life. Women could go to school, they could drive, they could work, they could do all the things in a normal way. They dressed Western, in a Western style of clothing. And so they had to then have the hammer down brought on them by their leadership, which has brought them to where they are today. But we see that with so many of these countries and those ways of life. It is that ancient way of life and that ancient thinking that, unfortunately, it doesn't take long, just as we can lose our freedoms in a generation, it doesn't take long for those next young men, especially that we talk about being military age, to fall in to that mentality, because that's all they know. It's well, It's like a gang mentality. And if you have no parental unit, no male role model, you can easily fall into what is considered normal and expected for you to do.
Yeah, it's interesting how the dynamic shapes up when you paint that picture. When we see Iranians, Persians, living a Western lifestyle like they did 5 or 6 decades ago, we go, look, they had freedom. They had good things. But there is a subculture there that clearly didn't think the same way. In other words, we're looking at it through the only spectrum we have, the only filter we have is our life, yes. Our experiences. So we look at it from a Western standpoint, and there's other people's subculture that say, hey, these advancements, the so-called progressiveness, the so-called worldliness, all that, that leads to death and destruction. That leads to sin, and that leads to, you know, STDs. It leads to rape. It leads to whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll say these are all bad things and that we must return to our religious roots, so to speak, and they do it with a heavy hand.
Yeah, and that is sad because, unfortunately, it affects them generationally, and in this instance, it actually affects the world. I know we've taken lots of angles, lots of things we're looking at, because, yes, it is a very solemn day of commemoration, of remembering, but I think if we only remember the tragedy and don't try to figure out, okay, can we affect the future so that these things don't happen, we have to at least have that conversation. We're coming up on 9:46. I'm Greg Cassidy. It's the Bob Rowe Show, 97.3 The Sky.
September 11th is forever in our memories. The heroes from that day remind us of the strength of America.
Each of us will remember what happened that day and to whom it happened. We'll remember the moment the news came. Some will carry memories of a face and a voice gone forever.
Wow, it's hard to believe. It has been 25 years, and while normally at this hour, Bob, we would be doing things that make you smile, I think that there is a twist to this day, and that is the good stories, the memories, the heroes. There are so many things that while a sad day, yes, but yet you can find a bit of a rainbow, if you will, among that storm.
Yeah. And thanks to my dentist, Transformation Dentistry, and Dr. Samantha Annis, who I know, you know, totally understands this kind of a moment. And it's difficult to come up with a smile kind of theme mm-hmm. under this circumstances. However, one of the things, the silver lining that's come out of all of this, a newfound, I think for a lot of people, a newfound really respect and appreciation for first responders in general.
Yes.
I really think that was huge. I think that the firefighters and the bravery they showed, of course, with law enforcement, I think those were huge. And, you know, a generation that was maybe getting a little complacent about some of these things, mm-hmm. All of a sudden could look around and say, wow, we do have real life heroes that live amongst us. And they're just average people. But they when the call comes in, they answer it like nobody else would.
Well, we kept hearing, you know, all those stories of as the people who were working in those towers, as they were running down the stairs, you know, they're met in those stairwells by firemen and first responders running up the stairs to try to do what they could do.
And look at the other things, the charitable stuff where we support our fighting men and women, you know, tunnel to towers.
Yes.
You know, we've got something closer to home, Soldiers Freedom Outdoors. People have stepped up. People contribute. You can never make the lives whole of those who've been impacted both by 9/11 directly and indirectly. But because we're Americans, because we're awesome and we're generous, we really do contribute and do the best we can to try to make life livable for those who really have been damaged by it.
And then, of course, there were the everyday heroes, some people that maybe were head of security for one of the companies that was there, who had actually made their employees for the years ahead of that go through scenarios where they're like, you know, something bad could happen. And we're, you know, 50, 60, 70 floors up and saved many lives that day and then lost their own life because they went back to make sure everybody was gone. Everyday heroes, people who weren't necessarily first responders, but they were risking it all. They had already made the call to their wife or their husband or their loved one and said, I may not be home. You're watching this on TV and you know what's going on. And yet they stayed to make sure that others got out. And sadly, they then did not. But that just shows what a great spirit and who some of these people, these real heroes were.
Well, and then once again, it comes back to not taking anything for granted. And that includes your family. Look, we travel all the time. People have to for business. We do for pleasure. You get on planes. We take it that, you know, you're going to get to your destination. It's just a matter of what headaches you might endure before, during, or after. Mm-hmm. But in general, we know these things are safe. You're going to work in the morning. You know, you're going to be safe. And we quit taking that for granted for at least a period of time and said, hug your loved ones. Tell them that you love them. Don't assume they know. Let them hear it from you all the time and truly have a sense of appreciation for all the blessings that you do enjoy.
And we take our American way of life sometimes for granted. And it's sad that sometimes it takes a tragedy, something like 9/11 or many things that happen, whether it's a war or just local crime. We don't appreciate it until there's a loss sometimes, I think. And that's kind of sad. We really need to be more optimistic and more forward thinking, a little more positivity, I think.
Yeah. This is a time to pause, to reflect on what has occurred. What can we learn from it? The good, the bad, the ugly, but pushing forward, taking the best and moving forward with the best we can be individually and as Americans. And we should strive toward that goal every day.
Yeah. And so maybe I'm hoping that as we move forward, we can maybe pick up a little bit on that, maybe have a reminder of how fortunate and how blessed we really are to be Americans. We are at 9:55 now, 5 away from 10. I'm Greg Cassidy. This is The Bob Rose Show. You're listening to 97.3 The Sky.
Time now for The Smoking Gun, brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. And, of course, it's going to be different today because today is a different kind of day. May we all have an attitude of gratitude and really hug those and tell those close to you that you love them. And also remember, we live amongst heroes. Could you answer the call? Yep. And let's all keep our head on a swivel. We're Americans. We can do this. And that is your smoking gun. The Smoking Gun is brought to you by Harry Beckwith Guns and Range in Micanopy. Thank you so much for your patience and thank you for supporting what we do. We appreciate you. On behalf of Greg Cassidy, I'm Bob Rose. God bless you and your family. Have a great, safe weekend. And don't forget, go Gators! See ya!